Hello, everybody. This is Rob Fournette with the podcast Hodge Pod, and I have another special guest on my podcast episode. Lori Bullard is the law enforcement administrator for the state of Tennessee, a position that she has held since 2019. Before that, Lori was an assistant commissioner of the driver services here in Tennessee, where she oversaw the daily operations of safety and homeland security's 50 driver service centers across Tennessee. That's a bunch. Lori, thank you so much for joining my podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
Sure, no problem.
What is your role with the state of Tennessee right now? And if you could explain that, you've probably been to every nook and cranny of the state of Tennessee, have you not?
It seems like I have. There's not very many counties that I think I have not visited over the last 10 years. So let me tell you about my position.
Yes, ma'am.
So I work for the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, which is one of the four divisions of the Department of Safety and Homeland Security. So under the umbrella of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security, they have the Highway Patrol, Tennessee Highway Patrol. They also have driver services, and they have Homeland Security for Tennessee, and then they have us, which is the Highway Safety Office. So what we do at the Highway Safety Office is we are trying to decrease fatalities across the state of Tennessee on all the roadways in Tennessee by education. Mm-hmm. We do the things that you hear a lot, click it or ticket, lose it, lose it. We do a lot of those campaigns. They're federal campaigns through NHTSA, the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, but we do it on a local level in Tennessee. So anything that deals with child protective seats, occupant protection, impaired driving, speeding, distracted driving, seatbelt usage, any of that you can think about with driving, we're concerned with very much. And that's what we really spend all of our time doing. We're trying to decrease fatalities.
I think that is a great way to get into this conversation. So what are fatalities like in the state of Tennessee right now? Have they gone up? Have they gone down? Because when you drive on the highway, sometimes some people just drive like out of control, too fast. But what are the statistics from like maybe the last couple of years? Has it gone up or has it gone down?
Well, actually, we're in a really, really good place. As of today, we are down 60. So this time last year, we were at 333 fatalities across Tennessee, and today we're at 273. So, you know, 60 doesn't seem like it's a high number, but if you think about not the number, you think about for each one of those fatalities, that's a person. I mean, that's somebody's mother, father, brother, mm-hmm. sister, nephew, grandma. That's somebody that's not going to be at the table at Christmas time. Somebody's not going to be at events. They're not going to be at graduations or birthday parties or any of that. So even though it's a number, it's not a number to us. It's a person to us. Yeah, so I consider 60 a good number for right now, knock on wood. You know, it fluctuates just really depending on, you know, weather influences it. You know, COVID, when we had COVID a few years ago, that really influenced it. And an interesting thing about the COVID fatalities, you would think, you know, people started working from home. So you would think that during that year or year and a half that we would have a decrease in fatalities. And we didn't actually. We actually had an increase because the highways were not as busy. People working from home and people not shopping and not getting out and going to restaurants and concerts and sporting events. But they also saw that the freeway was not full of cars. And so they kind of felt like that just gave them the go ahead to just speed as much as you want because there's nobody around.
That's horrible. So what is the state law in Tennessee as far as phones, like texting and talking on the phone? What is the law? Is that you should not be talking? That's against the law, is it not?
It is. Well, we have a hands-free law that says you can't have any part of your body touching your telephone. You can have it on the hands-free if you have it going through your speaker system through your car, or if you have a little device that sits in your cup holder that holds it. You can talk on the phone, but we don't really want to encourage that either, even though everybody seems to do it, present company included. I do it from time to time, but what it does is it distracts you. It takes your attention away from driving. And so you're not supposed to do it, but people do. So, I mean, what we can look at the law for distracted driving and hands-free is, it's really kind of hard to enforce it, but we do the best we can, you know, trying to keep people off their cell phones because they're holding their phones up here. They're typing, texting on their knees, texting on the steering wheel or wherever they can. But some of them, people will just be bold. They'll hold it right up in front of their face and be typing. And anytime you do that, you're taking your attention away from the roadway. People stop in front of you suddenly and you're texting. The time it's going to take your brain to register the fact that the person in front of you has stopped, you will have already run into them.
Yeah. So one thing that I see on the road a lot is people driving $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 vehicles and they're texting. I mean, that is just ludicrous, but that's just me. I'm just a average citizen, but I just think it's crazy to drive in any situation texting. But if you're driving an expensive vehicle, you crash that vehicle, you hit somebody from behind, that's wasted as far as I'm concerned. Have you seen, there's a commercial on TV about, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a guy that he has a little board on his car and he's playing video games when he's driving. I forget the name of it. It's funny, but it's not funny because the guy's like enthralled in his video game while he's driving. I think it's Nationwide or one of those, Allstate, I think. I'm not sure, but that's a crazy commercial.
Yeah, it is. It is an insurance commercial, and you're right. It is funny, but it's actually true. We see people doing all kinds of stuff. They're eating, putting on makeup. I saw somebody doing a crossword puzzle on their steering wheel while they were driving. So, I mean, you think about, surely nobody would do that, but if you can think about it, they've probably done it. You know, that commercial's really funny. They've got the female that's driving, has got the memo post-it notes all over the car. She's got a pencil in her mouth and she's, you know, doing some kind of work. But people do that. You'd really be surprised.
Every time I see that guy playing the video game on the car, he's got like a suit on. I guess he's an executive. Every time I start laughing, I think it's funny. But another thing which really irks me is drunk driving. The stupidest thing anybody can do is get behind a wheel while drunk driving. You're putting yourself at risk, and you're putting an innocent person at risk as well while you're driving. It's absolutely stupid. I love the fact that they have commercials that scare the heck out of people. There's a commercial, I think you've seen it. I think it was Tennessee, where people like lying on the ground dead. I think that was very effective, a very effective commercial.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, you get mixed emotions about that. Some people who have had family members maybe killed or are impaired by someone that's on drugs or drugs and alcohol, you know, sometimes they say it's a little bit too traumatic to them and they don't like seeing that. And I can understand that. But at the same time, you have to do something to get people's attention, because everybody, and I say everybody, I mean, obviously I don't know everybody in the world, but most people think it will never happen to me. But when you take a drink or two or three, your brain is not processing the fact that you shouldn't be driving. You're not capable of giving your driving 100% of your attention, because your senses are slowed down. You're not able to, your perception is off. You're not able to do things that you could do if you were not impaired by drugs or alcohol. And so you make that bad decision thinking it's not going to happen to me. But then when it does and you end up in jail and you're spending the weekend, it doesn't stop there. Assuming that you don't even hit anybody and kill anybody, say you have a wreck or you get stopped by a police officer and you get arrested for drunk driving, you're going to spend the weekend in jail, but then you're going to have to hire a lawyer and you're going to probably get one of the ignition interlocks that are affixed to your steering wheel, which can prompt you at any time to have to blow in it to register, to make sure you're not drinking still and driving. It costs, you know, $10,000 for a DUI by the time you go to court. And usually you don't go to court in a week. You know, it's usually delayed a couple of months and then they have continuances. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to get your attorney in court or whatever happens. Sometimes court cases go a little bit long, trials go a little bit long, and you get pushed, you know, down the road. And so it can drag on for years. But the cost of it is just not worth that one decision. But that's only if you don't hit anybody. If you hit someone and you injure them seriously or you kill them, I mean, that's something you have to live with for the rest of your life. And I know personally, I would not want to live with that. I just, you know, it's sobering, no pun intended, when you think about really the consequences of one bad decision while you drive.
So when what is the penalty if, like you said, you spend the weekend in jail if you're out drinking at night? What happens? Is your license revoked or suspended for a certain period of time? And you know, if you have a job, you have to reassess and reconfigure your life just to get to work.
This is true. Yeah. So normally you would get your license suspended for a year. Whoa. And you're not allowed to drive on a suspended license, which, as you said, that would give you a problem to get to work and back. So then what you have to do is you apply for a restricted license through the driver improvement section, and they have to approve your restricted license to only go to the certain places. So you have to have your work address. You have to say what time you're going to go to work, what time you're coming home from work. And those are the only places that you would be able to drive. But, you know, if you got kids and you got to pick them up from school, how do you do that? I mean, people don't think that far in advance when they're at a bar drinking or at a friend's house drinking. They don't think that far in advance. But yeah, you would have to get a restricted license in order to drive while your license is revoked or suspended.
Back in my younger days, when my friends up in Massachusetts, they go to New Year's Eve. I was the designated driver. I drank Coke all night, so I didn't care. I drove them there and I drove them home. So getting behind the wheel is the stupidest thing you could do. And yes, if your license is suspended for a year, your job could be affected by it. Your whole rest of your life could be affected by it. So that is some great, great information on that. So you worked for the Memphis Police Department at one time. How long have you been in your role with the state of Tennessee? And you can talk about your Memphis Police Department career.
So I started my Memphis Police Department career at the young age of 21. and I spent 25 years at the Memphis Police Department. I retired in 2011. I was at the rank of a colonel when I left. And I was over the West Precinct, which is now, I think, Crump Station. But it was the West Precinct that covered like the zoo area, Midtown. I had a little bit of everything there. I had hospitals. I had the zoo. I had schools. I had drug areas. I had Central Garden. So, I mean, you have a little bit of everything from higher class to lower income areas in that neighborhood. Great place to work. And, you know, in 25 years, I got to work at some really, really good places. Mm-hmm. I got to work in special operations. When I was a lieutenant, I was over the mounted patrol. I also got to work in the crime scene. I got to work in the robbery division, felony assault division, traffic division. I was at the training academy for several years. So, that's the one good thing about police work is if you you kind of get tired of one area, you can move to another one and learn new skills and, you know, just change up your day-to-day activities. And so that was really nice. Over 25 years, I got to work at some really good places.
So what was it like working crime scene investigation? Is that sobering when you get to a crime scene? And I know it's not fun, but what are crime scene investigations like?
Well, it's funny you say that's not fun, because it really was. That was one of the funnest times of my career, was when I got to work in crime scene. For me, it was always fun trying to figure out, looking at evidence and looking at things on the scene. Is this something that is going to be pertinent to the case that you're investigating? Because when you arrive on a scene and you have a homicide, you know, you're looking at a lot of different things, but time is really important. That first, 48 hours of a homicide is really key, because your evidence is fresh. You know, you have witnesses that you might can get a hold of to try to get information from. Mm-hmm. And you're looking around, but you're not sure. You may see a cigarette butt. You're not sure if that's going to have anything to do with this crime. So you're kind of having to look at everything. You have a big picture, but then you have the smaller picture around where the actual crime happened. And so it's not fun in the sense of, like, you know, going to a party or going to a sporting event, but the fun part of it is trying to figure out, you know, what happened here and putting the pieces together to be able to prove what happened there, you know, collecting evidence, making sure you don't contaminate anything. But it was interesting. There were a lot of different cases. You do see a lot of things. I think the one drawback to work in the crime scene is you do see so much of the extreme that it does affect you. I mean, how could it not? And so you have to kind of really compartmentalize things, you know, while you're working there. But, you know, they have resources available now, and you know, they have different things that they can do to kind of help you get through some of those. Some of them that you see are really, really shocking to the conscience. I mean, you know, if you saw a child homicide or something like that, that they have a tendency to stay with you. But that was a very interesting and very detail oriented position when I worked in crime scene.
I remember that show 48 Hours that was on years ago. That was a riveting show. I know Memphis Police Department was on there for a few years. That was it's an unbelievable show. So how is a crime scene determined? Like, and when you see the yellow tape, how does that determine when you see arrive on a crime scene?
Yeah. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to keep people out of your crime scene area, and you're trying to keep evidence in. And so the reason for the tape is you want to make sure you tape off a certain area to keep bystanders. Everybody wants to come and look. And media, you know, they want to be there to film. And so what you do is you have to go far enough out to where nobody's going to get into your evidence. And sometimes you don't know how far that is. So you kind of go past where you think it might be. And then you stay inside that one particular area.
Interesting. That's I always wonder about that, how it is determined or approaching a crime scene. So just a few other things I would like to talk about. Like you mentioned the highway. You see a lot of weird stuff on television about road rage. And road rage, I mean, people just go crazy in a car, and it's like a weapon. What are some tips to maybe avoid road rage if you're on a road and you're coming across a driver who's very aggressive? What are some tips that you could spread out for people listening?
You know, sometimes people are kind of in their own little world, and they're trying to get to work, or they're trying to get somewhere, and they may cut someone off accidentally, or they may get too close to a car. There's not really anything that you could do to keep someone from getting mad about that. Yeah, road rage is a real thing, and people get killed. Well, we see that in Nashville all the time. I know of two or three specific instances where the driver did get killed as a result of road rage. One was a nurse not too long ago. There was one a couple years ago at Christmas Day, a guy who got shot on the interstate as a result of road rage. They still haven't determined who killed him. They did find out who killed the nurse, but the guy, they did not. But you can't do anything if you accidentally pull over and somebody, or you cut, you know, or cut them off or something. You know, the thing about it is pay attention as best as you can to what you're doing and everything around you. I think sometimes people get so involved in their world that they're not looking in their mirror. They're not looking in the side mirrors. They're not looking in their rearview mirror, not paying attention to what everybody else is doing. They're just concerned about what they're doing. But you can kind of see aggressive drivers. You know, I see it. I drive a lot, and I'm on the highways a lot with work, traveling. And I see a lot of people. I see them way back, but they'll be zipping around and just cutting through cars, weaving in and out of cars, motorcycles. I see motorcycles do that. And I just try to stay away from those people because I don't want to get in their way. And I certainly don't want them to run into me or you know, cause me to have a wreck. So, you know, just paying attention really is the best tip. But if you have somebody that's really like right up on your bumper and you can tell that they're aggressive and it's targeted at you for whatever reason, it could be nothing, but I mean, you know, if they're mad about something, the best thing to do is try to get away from them as soon as you can, not engage in any kind of back and forth talk. A lot of times they'll pull up next to you and try to engage you in some kind of discussion, or, you know, they flip you the bird or cuss you out, let them do it and move on and try to pay attention to what you're doing. If they continue to do it, you can always call *THP. Which is, I think it's 847, and let them know that this person is aggressive and that you feel threatened. And if there's anyone that can come that's close, they will, or they could relay it to, you know, the local police department. If it were me and I thought that they really might do something, I would take the next exit and just try to, right, you know, get away from them.
I think that's a great, great bit of advice to pull over or just let them pass. If somebody is really aggressive, I go, knock yourself out. You can pass me. I don't care what you do. knock yourself out. You can go right ahead. It's fine with me. You had mentioned situation, being aware of your surroundings. Another thing is when you're out and about on your daily life, you got to be aware of your situation around you. So what are some tips like if you're going out to the store? Sometimes I'll see people on their phone when they're walking into the store, not paying attention in a parking lot. You need to pay attention at all times when you're out. Is that not correct?
Oh, absolutely, Rob. One of the things that I see a lot in parking lots is people will be walking from the store. You were talking about them walking into the store. They're walking from the store to their car. They're texting or they're on their phone. They're not paying attention. They get to their car. They're fumbling to get their keys, or they're not even paying attention to anything around them. I think, for me, whenever I leave a store, I've got my key in my hand. I don't have anything in my other hand. If I got a bag, I try to, get it across my arm or, throw it across your shoulder or something. When I go to my car, I go straight to my car. I unlock it, get in my car, shut the door, lock it, and get to where I'm, going. Get if I'm backing out or pulling forward or whatever. I don't sit in my car and talk on the phone for a few minutes. I mean, I'm not saying that you're inviting trouble, but you can minimize being a target by really a lot by paying attention to what you're doing and not being on your phone, walking to a store, walking from a store. I mean, that stuff can wait.
Yeah, you're not being paranoid by being aware of your surroundings. You're being preventive. You see something that doesn't look right, then it's not right. Like if we're going out shopping and we park and something doesn't look right, we don't park there. We'll go park somewhere else. So just never know what's going to happen. Just be aware of your surroundings. So in your career with the MPD and working for the state of Tennessee, something on the light side, have you met any famous folks? And what was that like when you did? Especially when you're in Nashville, you must meet a lot of people there in Nashville. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
When I was in driver's license, we did have a few people that we did meet. It would have been more chaotic for them to have gone to one of the driver service centers because it wouldn't have taken, but it would have taken a few minutes for people to get on those phones, and word spreads like wildfire. People would be on Facebook, and before you know it, the parking lot would be full, and you wouldn't be able to even do business. So yeah, we did get to meet a few people, but I would tell you offline what their names are, but I don't want to say it on here.
That's quite all right. I think that's pretty cool. It's amazing. Yeah, you see somebody famous, like I follow this photographer in New York, and all he does is show the actors and actresses and famous people walking by, and people are screaming and yelling at him to get signed autographs, so I can definitely see where that is. What are some other things about your career that really are rewarding when you work, like here in Memphis, of what you're doing now? So you're making a difference here and now when you're on your state job, driving. You have, 60 less deaths than last year? So that's improvement over last year. So do you get some personal gratification when that happens?
Yeah, you really do. Because I know when I started in law enforcement, it was a little bit different of an environment than it is now. With cell phones and people having computers and more people being out and about, it's like you're under a microscope. So everything that you do, people are judging it. And of course, when you see things on media, you're getting what the media, and I'm not bashing media.
No.
But you're getting what the media wants you to see. I mean, the majority of the time, there's more to the story, but you're not getting the rest of the story. You're only getting a portion of it. And so it's really kind of hard for law enforcement, particularly because people are making decisions about how they feel about law enforcement officers based on a few things. For example, the thing that happened in Memphis just, recently, the Tyre Nichols situation, everybody in Memphis and Memphis police officers are not like that. I mean, that is one piece of a big department. And so you can't really judge the whole department based on what a few officers do. When you look at anything, not just law enforcement, but in any kind of career, when you look at, even preachers. I mean, you see preachers being involved in sex assaults and different sex abuse cases. You see that a lot. So there's bad people and making bad decisions in whatever profession you're looking at. It's not just law enforcement. So I think, when you get such bad publicity and bad media, surrounding law enforcement, it is hard to make a difference. It's hard because really, I know for me and I know for a lot of people that were friends of mine that I worked with in Memphis, we wanted to do good things. We wanted to help people change flat tires or give people a ride home or, you know, or help somebody that's had some kind of traumatic situation. So you really do want to make a difference. But when you are having to handle a lot of the violent crime things that you see, stolen cars and people breaking into businesses, when you're handling that, you're not really seeing that you're making a difference. And you may be, but you're not really seeing that. One of the things that's so rewarding about this job now is we do see that we are making a difference. One of the things that we do at the Highway Safety Office is we get federal grant money and we distribute that among law enforcement agencies in Tennessee. And our non-traditional partners like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or SAD, which is Students Against Destructive Decisions. We have Safe Kids and you know, other things, other non-traditional partners that you don't think about with highway safety. But we get to give money to those departments for, you know, whatever it is that they need to do to reduce fatalities. If they want to do checkpoints, if they want to do saturations of certain areas that they're having a large amount of fatalities, traffic fatalities in, they can use that money to concentrate on more manpower for, you know, and data now, we have it to a fine science. I think you can pull data and you can find out what areas you're having the most fatalities in, to the week, to the day, to the hour. You know, Thursdays at 11 o'clock at night in this particular area, we've had 5 fatalities in the last month. And so you can allocate your manpower based on the data that's, you know, historical data. We, you know, you can go a year, you can go a month, however much you want. But we also use that money for resources to help them buy things that they may not be able to afford. A lot of small departments can't afford to buy the things that they need in order to enforce traffic safety. So, you know, we get to help them with that. We help them with training. We do training on crashes, advanced crash reconstruction, radar, LIDAR, standardized field sobriety testing. We do a drug DRE, which is, you know, drug recognition expert, which we train officers on how to utilize cues from people's eyes in the way that they're functioning to determine what kind of drug they're on, other than just alcohol. So, I mean, it's not, it goes really deeper than what people think.
That's fascinating.
But it is rewarding because you see that you're doing good for departments and you're trying to make a difference. Even if you just make one difference a day.
One life save is totally, totally awesome. You had mentioned Mothers Against Drunk Driving. That must be really sobering when you meet mothers who have had children die because of drunk drivers. Have you had that in the past where you've met mothers? Because they're the heroes, because they're the ones out there. That's their mission after their child gets killed.
Yeah, we do a lot of work with MAD, and we do have victims that come and they will give a statement or they'll do a victim impact panel, or, you know, they come to a lot of our events. We actually have someone who's on staff who's been there probably about a year. And her daughter was hit by an impaired driver. She's paralyzed. The daughter was 5 when she was hit by a drunk driver, and she was paralyzed at the age of 5. She is now in college. She can drive a vehicle. You know, she can do a lot of things, but there's a lot of things that she can't do because she is confined to a wheelchair. And so to have someone on staff that goes around to the events that we do, who can say, this happened to my family. This isn't something I see in my day-to-day job because I see it in other people. It happened in her family. Mm. She's very passionate about it. She does a lot of public service. You know, she goes to schools and she shows pictures and she shows, you know, a lot of different things that her daughter's had to endure over the past 20 years. And so it's really sad when you talk to the victims who have been impacted and their families.
You had mentioned Homeland Security, so you were under the umbrella of Homeland Security. So that is you're getting grants, and you must be in contact with all law enforcement here in the state of Tennessee.
a large majority of them. I think in 2023, we provided grants for 360-something agencies.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we're in contact with a lot of agencies. Of course, the bigger ones, Memphis, Knoxville, Chattanooga, Nashville, we do a lot of work with them, but we do a lot of smaller communities too.
Tennessee is a pretty long state. It takes, what, about 7-8 hours to get from Memphis to like East Tennessee. So have there any counties you have not been in the state of Tennessee during your tenure here with the state?
There may be a handful, but of the 95 counties, I've probably at least visited 90 of them. You know, and one good thing, it's not just me. I'm not the only one that's traveling. Yeah. You know, we have 26 people on our staff, and we all travel. I oversee 4 law enforcement liaisons, and they each have an area. So we have West, East, Middle Tennessee, which goes from Parksville all the way down to Fayetteville. And then we have someone that's in the Cumberland region, which would include Chattanooga. And so really they're responsible for the counties that are in their specific region. We do cross over and help each other, but yeah, we don't have one person going across the whole state. We have 4 different ones that divide it up.
I thought you were hitting every county in the state the way you have a staff. I should have known that. That's pretty funny. So I think...
yeah, it's not just me.
That's what I thought. But, Lori Bullard, thank you very much for coming on my podcast. We were to schedule something a couple of weeks ago, but I had an issue on my end, and she was very gracious enough to come on my podcast episode. And I hope she would come back maybe on after the new year to let us know the results and talk about anything that she has seen since we spoke today. Lori, I want to thank you very much for coming on my podcast. I sincerely appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.